Hello, general audience and traders. This is Bob Fox from GreenMoney.com, and today again I have the privilege to have Glenn Neely with me, the expert in Neo Way analysis as well as the Neely River theory. Glenn, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good. I was sick for like 2 or 3 weeks, but finally recovered and getting back to normal.
Okay. Well, this is going to be our last out of three series to provide a general outlook, introductory type of conversations regarding Neely River theory.
Right.
Would you like to provide a brief intro of what we discussed in the last couple interviews?
Okay. The general idea of river theory is, you know, the goal of it is to try to move away from the standard type of technical analysis and any kind of forecasting-based approach, because I've realized over 30 years of following markets that the real reason people have problems with trading is because they get emotionally involved in their prediction of the future. And because they want to be right, they frequently will risk more capital than they should, they'll hold trades longer than they should in the hope that they're going to be right. So the whole goal of river theory is to remove all of that, remove that paradigm, that forecasting egocentric kind of, you know, I'm smarter than you kind of paradigm, to make trading more objective, easier, unemotional, and more successful. So that's the, you know, start off as the goal, but 10, 15 years ago when I began this, I knew that wave theory wasn't going to be as useful once the bear market began in 2000, and probably wouldn't be that useful for a significant portion of 10 to maybe even 20 years. So I had to figure out some way to follow markets, trade markets, and deal with them in an environment where wave analysis wasn't going to be as helpful. And that was the beginning of river theory, and little did I know where it was going to exactly lead me, but it definitely has gotten me to a point where I've designed a trading technology that's independent of forecasting. It focuses on strategy and how the trader should behave and act and maneuver more than based on what he thinks is going to happen into the future. So what you're doing here and now has nothing to do with where the market might be going or what you think might be happening or how much money you're going to make, but it just has to do with surviving until the market does whatever it's going to do. Same concept that we've talked about, you know, if you're in a boat in a river, you're not worried about where the ocean is. You're worried about surviving in the river and the rapids and the waterfalls until you finally get to the river, coming to the ocean, because you're eventually going to get there as long as you don't, you know, hurt yourself before you get there. That's the idea of river theory, just survival in the here and now until the flow of the market takes you wherever it's going to go.
Yeah.
So if you look a little bit from our last discussion, this is the last chart we left off with, or one of the last ones, showing how in a market, money is the force that's driving markets up and down instead of gravity like in a river. And if you were to take some kind of object, a ping pong ball or something that floated on the top of the water and the river, and you place it at the edge of the river, it's going to not go perfectly horizontal with the flow of the water, but it's going to chop around and get caught in eddies and currents and everything else. And we discussed how this movement could start to mimic the behavior that you see in an impulsive wave pattern, or potentially even corrective wave patterns, but in this case, an impulsive wave pattern, which starts to connect river theory to wave theory or wave theory to river theory, because I almost think that river theory is a superset of wave theory. The wave theory is one portion of the equation of river theory, because wave theory really doesn't deal well with the middle of patterns. It doesn't deal well with how to trade markets specifically, how to move stops, how to exit. It only allows you to do that when the structure is clear, and structure is only clear in a market maybe 10, 20% of the time. So what do you do the other 80 to 90% of the time? River theory doesn't really, wave theory doesn't really tell you what to do the majority of the time that you might be in a position besides just wait and hold and hope.
Sure.
Say it again.
No, I just said this is what we discussed towards the end of discussions last time,
right,
about how similar or how beneficial between the Neely River theory and obviously that was an impulse wave that you show in the Neo wave or Ellie wave. So
right. So then the big question is, and this happened when I was at a conference in Paris about 10 years ago, talking to, you know, another well-known person in the industry, and mentioned to him that I was working on a, you know, new technology. He had asked me, you know, what I'd been doing lately, and so I was working on a new technology on how a new technology to trade markets without forecasting, and he looked at me like that was the stupidest thing he'd ever heard of in his life, because virtually the entire industry has this belief system that forecasting is the only valid approach to making money in the future, that you have to know what the future is going to be able to make money, and that if you don't, then you're not going to make money, and if you're not good at forecasting, you're going to lose money. So, you know, he just didn't get it at all, and that's pretty much the way most people behave and react when I talk about this. But the process has to begin in a different kind of way than the way most people get involved in markets. When most people come to a market and decide they want to invest or make money trading, they come with a belief system. And that belief system might be that, you know, the moon and the stars, for those who do astrology, are the core reason markets move, and the timing of the moon and the stars will tell you when you're going to get market tops and bottoms. Or they might believe in cycles, or they might believe that interest rates are the primary driving force behind markets, or they might believe psychology and sentiment is. But they come in with a belief system, and then they try to force that belief onto the market and try to get the market to fit their belief system. And that's a real backwards kind of way of approaching markets, because, of course, the markets could care less what you believe. The markets, you know, are going to do whatever they want, and your goal shouldn't be to try to get the market to fit your belief system. Your goal should be to try to understand what the motivating or the foundational factors are relating to markets, not a connection to something else. I always consider technical analysis or any kind of fundamental analysis, anything that uses something else to predict what a market's going to do, to be sort of like a crutch, because it would be similar to going to a doctor and let's say that you're in a hospital and you're the patient laying in the bed, and the doctor walks into the room and he proceeds to ask everybody in the room how you feel. You know, ask your mother and your father and your brother and your sister, you know, how does Johnny feel? And everybody, you know, gives their opinion of how you feel. Instead of asking you how you feel, he's asking everybody else how you feel. That's what most technical analysis, what most fundamental analysis is all about, trying to correlate something external to the market to tell the market how it's supposed to feel or how it's supposed to behave, which is, you know, obviously on the surface pretty preposterous. So the goal of river theory was to start with a foundation that is so solid, so logical, and so incontrovertible that it has nothing to do with opinion, nothing to do with philosophy. It's just a core fact and reality, which this is the first time I've ever seen an approach done in this way. And the whole river phenomenon builds off of an indisputable, unchangeable foundation, which I'll go to in a minute.
I think in some way it makes sense because, you know, majority of the analysis in the marketplace, it's essentially a derivative of the trader behind it. And what you're trying to do is to go to the trader behind it, who is dominating the market at the moment of the price actions, to identify that and trade accordingly based on their behavior. And obviously nobody else is doing that in the marketplace. everybody is based on a secondary observation of the price action to identify, how to enter and how to exit the market.
Yeah, let's say that you're long the market, and all of a sudden, a bomb strikes New York City or Los Angeles or whatever, and the market goes up. Well, you're going to make money independent of whatever that bomb supposedly was supposed to do. So the bomb is an external non-market event. It may have an impact, but the only thing that decides whether you make money is what happens to price action. So if you're long and the market goes up, independent of any world news or any personal feelings about anything, you're going to be in a more positive position. If you're long and the market goes down, you're going to be in a more negative position. So the only final determining factor of whether you make or lose money is price action. Everything else is an opinion.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
The way, risk theory is strictly based on what prices are doing, nothing else.
Right.
I'm not interested in any correlations. I'm not interested in opinions. I'm not interested in sentiment. I'm interested in what has price actually done. Now, the next big step with river theory that is extremely different is I have no interest in what I think the future is going to be. I only have interest in what actually verified here, either currently or historically. So
right.
Not what you think is going to happen, but what you know has already happened. So those are things that are can't be changed by the future, can't be changed by opinion, can't be interpreted, their fact, and that's it.
Right.
So as part of this process, and to make this concept work, I mentioned to you early on that river theory does what no system I've ever seen does with markets, and it divides it into three different types of traders. So we're not trying to get a system which is following or bargain hunting or top and bottom picking. We're incorporating all three technologies, all three types of trading into one sort of all-encompassing approach. So a critical part of river theory is dividing the market into those different traders, into the bargain hunters, trend followers, and top and bottom pickers, and their motivations, understanding, how they behave and how they enter markets and how they exit markets, not necessarily what they believe about the future, but how they actually get in and how they actually get out.
Sure.
So that has to do with their entry style. If you're a trend follower, you're going to buy into strength or sell into weakness. If you're a bargain hunter, you're going to buy on a pullback or sell on a corrective, a rally against the downtrend. If you're a top and bottom picker, you're going to sell into strength and buy into weakness, right?
Sure.
So each of them has their own individual style, and we need to understand all of them if you want to be a good trader and make money consistently, not one third of the time by picking a system that's going to be one third of the reality of markets.
Sure.
And another thing that I've never seen any system address, and it has to do with what I call financial capacity. Financial capacity has to do with how much money. If you come into a market with $5,000 or $10,000, it's absolutely impossible to trade that market and keep risk at 1% or 2% per trade, because the minute you get in, unless your stop's just a few ticks away, you're automatically going to be risking 10, 15, 20% on your trade.
Right.
And so the amount of money you have has a great deal to do with how you trade and how you can trade. And not all, virtually no system I've ever seen takes this into consideration, that, rich people trade differently than people with less money, because they can hold positions longer, they can have bigger stops, and they can risk percentage-wise less.
Right.
So those are all cool ingredients in, understanding how to work with a way that reflects reality, not perceptions or opinions about the future, but the current reality.
Sure.
Okay. Talk about what I call the forecasting paradigm and what is the stage to markets, and then I'll talk about what river theory attempts to do. So the forecasting paradigm is a three-step, and most virtually all their time in the first stage of this process, which I call the forecasting process. And as a neophyte myself, the first, I'd say, 15, almost 20 years in this business, my primary belief system was that forecasting was the road to riches in trading markets, just like virtually everyone believes when they first get involved. And because of that, I tried to get extremely good at wave theory and perfect wave theory, which, you know, led me to eventually create a lot of new innovations for wave theory and write my book, which is what my book's all about, all those new discoveries about, you know, proper wave analysis. But after 15 years of that process, I started to realize that my wave analysis was getting better and better. My ability to predict the future was getting better and better, but my trading was getting better at a much slower pace. It wasn't nearly keeping up with my ability to predict markets. And so that started causing some problems for me. Like, why is this divergence happening between my ability to predict and my ability to trade and make money? They should go lockstep, hand in hand, like everyone believed, but they weren't. And so that's when I started to realize something was wrong with this belief system or this paradigm. And that was the impetus for me to begin developing river theory. So I spent probably, you know, 10, 15 hours a day, sometimes 7 days a week, looking at charts, applying wave analysis, trying to figure out what the market's going to do to decide if I was going to buy or sell or, you know, whatever I was going to do, move my stops, stay out. But I spent an enormous amount of time in this area. But once I decided that something was going to happen and I knew what it was going to be, well, then I had to worry about where am I going to enter? And, you know, how much am I going to risk and how large of a position and how big of a stop and all that. And then if you get in, then the next thing you have to worry about is where you're going to exit, you know, how much you're going to exit, how often you raise your stops. And so there's a lot of stuff involved in this three-step process. And if we're generous, we could say that we might be right 50% of the time on our forecast, and 50% of the time on our entry, because, you know, if you have an entry at 400 and the market goes to 401 and you're trying to go long and then it shoots up to 500, well, then you didn't get in. So your entry was wrong, right? So say you're right about your entry half the time and you're right about the exit. Maybe you get out way too soon, or your exit's to get out at 501 and it only makes it to 500, so you never get out and it goes back down to, you know, to your stop and you get break even or you lose money. So you might be right on each one of those, if you're lucky, half the time. And if you do the math with this three-step process, by the time you get to the end, you're only going to be right about 12% of the time. And this is the reason why the forecasting paradigm doesn't work, because you have to be right about too much, too often. And in the end, if you're lucky to be right half the time in each one of them, you're still only going to be right about 12% of the time.
Right.
Any comments about that? Any personal experience?
Yeah. Well, obviously, as a trader, that's how, at least for me, how I trade is based on what you just said. And
right. Pretty much 95% of the entire population trades based on this process.
Right. I mean, it's obviously challenging because, like you said, you know, it's you have to be right You know, in those three various processes, you have to be right all the time to have a very profitable trade. And
let's compare it to the river analogy again. Let's suppose that you're standing next to a river and you're trying to decide which direction is the ocean. There's a forecast where you have a 50-50 chance it could be to the right or to the left. Well, trying to forecast it, you can just observe and you can see the water's moving one way, so you know that that has to be the way the ocean is, right? Water can't go contrary to the ocean, at least not in 90 to 95% of the circumstances. There are man-made rivers, I think, sometimes get reversed, but otherwise, water always flows toward the ocean, toward the lake, not away from it, right? So the observation of the direction, instead of predicting, you just observe. So you can wipe out this portion right away because you don't have to predict, you just observe. As far as entry, well, it really doesn't matter where you enter in a river. You're still going to eventually get to wherever it's going as long as you don't crash or fall off the, you know, waterfall or whatever. So the entry really doesn't matter that much. The exit would really be the goal, which is reaching the ocean or, in this case, making a profit on the trade. Now, do you really have a choice on which way the water flows? No. right?
No.
So you can't really, it doesn't matter what you believe about the river and what it's going to do. You get in a boat, it's going to take you the direction the water's flowing, period. If you're worried about where you're going to get in, does it really matter? Well, not really, because eventually you're still going to get to the same place. As far as exiting, that's going to matter because it'll determine whether you actually get to the ocean, don't get to the ocean, you make it to your goal, or you don't make it to your goal. But the first two don't really matter that much. And the goal of river theory is to pretty much try to get rid of the first two in the equation, because that's not the part, you certainly don't have any control over number one, which is the direction the market's going or the river is going. You do have some, you know, control over where you're going to get in, but that should be more dictated by the market than by you. And where you're going to get out is to some degree up to you, but it's also more, should be more dictated by the market or dictated by circumstances. So let me move on to the next diagram. River theory, first of all, completely gets rid of step one. So you don't have any attempt to predict anything. So the goal has nothing to do, you know, reaching your goal has nothing to do with what you think about the direction of the river, okay, or the direction of the market. So that is completely ignored. As far as entry and exit, there's many different places you can enter into a market and still make money. You know, if it's going from 400 to 500, you get a 410, 420, 440, 450, and still eventually make money. So the exact entry point is not critical, but the stop placement is critical. In other words, that's similar to how you're going to manage that boat in the river. Are you going to, you know, paddle to the right, paddle to the left, avoid the sandbars, stay in the middle of the river? The things you're going to do right in the here and now matter to your survival until you reach your goal. So when it comes to market trading, what you do with your stops is really what decides whether you survive and whether your position stays in until the market reaches its destination. So the way you behave matters, but specifically where you win isn't that important. So it reduces the importance of the exact entry point quite dramatically. The focus is much more on the exit, which has to do with both the target, which is your goal to make money, and the stop, which is to control loss. So, you know, when you exit at a loss, or when you hit a stop, that's still an exit, or when you get out at a goal, that's still an exit. So this is where all the focus of river theory is on exactly how to exit, which means where you're putting your stops and where you're putting your targets. Very little time is spent on this. Most of the time is spent on exactly the opposite of what everyone spends most of their time on. I mean, my first 10 or 15 years, I always worried about what the market's going to do before I got in. Then I would get in, and then I would just sort of sit and wait and hope and pray and not really pay much attention to where I'm going to get out and how I'm going to get out. That was probably the least of my concerns because I was more focused on, you know, making a lot of money. I didn't want to get out at any particular time. I wanted to just make a lot of money. So river theory turns it all upside down. It puts most of the focus on what most people don't spend any time thinking about, which is how they're going to manage their trade, which means in reality where you're going to get out.
Right. Okay. Which it makes totally sense because, you know, most traders, especially new traders, they care so much about forecasting and, you know, catching a big wave instead of, you know, the number one thing in successful trading is survival and money management, and how you manage your exit is exactly focused on that.
Well, without knowing who's speaking or what the event is about, all you need to do is look at a transcript of any conference in the world, and you can pretty much tell if it's a conference for beginners, intermediate, or professional, because the intermediate, the beginners are always going to be talking about systems and forecasting and making lots of money and super leverage and all that kind of stuff with options and whatever. And then the professionals always talk about risk management, trading techniques, you know, capital preservation, that kind of thing.
Right, 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 totally. So
one thing I wanted to say here regarding the exit, one piece of evidence that could show you what I was saying, that the entry isn't important, but it's the exit that decides everything. I could basically get in, I could trade every market in the world and be virtually certain I'm not going to lose money if I got in all of them right now and 1 second later I got out of all of them. So it's the exit that decides whether you make money or not. If I held all of them, then who knows what's going to happen, right? But The exit is what controls your loss, is what controls your profit. That's where all the power is on the exit.
Right.
Okay, so let's move to the next chart. So I've mentioned this solid foundation earlier that's, you know, an indisputable, non-changeable market reality. Instead of trying to create a philosophy that we build market behavior around, we're going to deal with market behavior first and then construct a trading technology around that reality. Okay? So
sure.
The thing is, we're going to focus on the facts, which I mentioned earlier. And the fact is that price action is the only thing that determines whether you make or lose money. It doesn't depend on the moon and the stars. It doesn't depend on sentiment. It doesn't depend on the Fed. It only depends on what does price action do after you get in. So that's a fact. The River Theory talks about a logical process of tracking the controlling elements in a market. And the controlling elements are the three that I've mentioned already: trend traders, top and bottom pickers, and bargain hunters. Because one of those three, if the trend is up, has to make the most money. And if the trend is down, one of those three will make the most money. Everyone else of that group of six will either make less money or lose money. So there's always only one group making the most money. And the goal of River Theory is to identify that group that is doing the right thing in the right way, managing their boat or managing their trade in just the right way, that they don't get stopped out prematurely while they're waiting for the flow of the market to take them wherever the market decides it's going to go. So River Theory talks about where that control begins and where it ends and how you identify it, and that it's constantly showing a fluid process, that the control constantly changes over time from one group to the next. So there's never one group or one strategy that always works the best. So trend following doesn't always work the best, nor does bargain hunting, nor does top and bottom picking. They all have their day. Each works better in a particular environment. So the goal of you as a trader, if you want to survive and really do well in trading, is you want to be able to adjust the way you trade instead of trying to get the market to fit your belief system. Does that make sense?
Right, absolutely.
Okay. So when it comes to market action, price is the only reality if you're looking to make money or, you know, trade and make money. Your goal should be, what is price doing and how does that affect what I should be doing? So when it comes to markets, if you're dealing with a bar chart, there's only four realities that exist. You have up bars, down bars, inside bars, and outside bars. And each one of these bars represents a financial reality that is indisputable. If you're looking at a bar chart, no matter whether this is daily, weekly, monthly, hourly, 1 minute, doesn't matter. If your current bar is designed in such a way that the high of the current bar is higher than the previous and the low of the current bar is higher than the previous, by definition, that means that the, what I call retail buyers, those that are willing to buy near the highs, are willing to pay more this bar than the previous bar, and the retail, the wholesale buyers are willing to pay more also this bar than the previous bar. So your retail is near the higher end, because obviously when you're buying something, you're paying retail in most business, you know, transactions. But in the market, you have a wholesale end too, just like you do with people who warehouse products or, you know, manufacture products. So we have the wholesale end, which is the lower end of the bar, and the retail end, which is the higher. And then you might have a middleman where the transactions are done sort of towards the center of the range. And so markets reflect that economic reality. And so if you have a bar in which all the players were willing to pay more this time than last time, then by definition, it means that the buyers were in charge of the market for that one particular bar. You weren't trying to predict that they were going to be in charge. You let it happen, and then you observe that it's a fact. Do you follow me?
Yes.
So it's like looking at the river. You don't determine and predict the trend of the flow of the river. You just observe and say, you know, that's the fact. It's going that way. So you don't, now it may not be going that way 5 minutes from now as you turn the corner and the river starts going the other direction, but at this point in here and now, you can easily say, standing next to a river or looking at a market, if you have an up bar, buyers were in charge, if the river flows to the right, that moment in time that, you know, it's going a particular direction. So up imply that buyers were in charge for that one moment in time, whether that's a day, a week, a month, or a year. When you get a down bar, obviously to the contrary, it indicates that the sellers would have been in charge for that one moment in time. When you have an inside bar, the financial reality of an inside bar is that very few people are affected. Remember, when it comes to markets, most people place stops above previous highs or lows. It doesn't matter whether the highs and lows they're using are a one-minute chart, five-day chart, two-year chart, but they generally will use the higher low of some time frame that they've determined is important.
Yes.
And so that on whatever time frame they're talking about, stops tend to start to congregate right above and right below previous bars going back in time. And the further back you go, the more bars and the more stops that might be accumulating near a certain high or low. When you have an inside bar, the financial reality is that most people are not going to be stopped in or stopped out or take a new position because we haven't broken a new high and we haven't broken to a new low. Okay?
Yeah.
So when we have an inside bar, that's when we consider that nobody is in charge of this particular moment in time. So there's no financial impact or very minimal financial impact, maybe to options traders, but virtually no one else is impacted. So very little financial impact, so we just assume nobody's in charge of that bar. When you have an outside bar, it's sort of a split reality that it could be that the buyers are in charge, it could be that the sellers are in charge, and you don't know. So what do you do? Well, when you're in that environment, we use the laws of physics and physical motion and financial reality that when you're getting into a market, let's say you have $1 billion and you're trying to buy something, you can't buy all of it in 1 second. It takes time. You have to buy it over time. It could be days or weeks or who knows what amount of time, but it takes time to move in a lot of money and to move it out. So when it comes to markets, we always want to assume inertia and momentum, which are laws of physics and laws of money in the market, that inertia favors the direction that the market was already going. So let's say that you're, again, next to the river and you notice that the river is going to the right. It's flowing to the right. Well, if you close your eyes and step 10 steps to the right, well, you can probably assume it's probably still going to the right because of inertia and momentum, right?
Right.
The same idea with markets and price action. If the trend of the market was already down before you got an outside bar, the probabilities are pretty strong that the trend will continue to be down and that the sellers are actually in charge, even though the buyers are attempting to take control, will probably fail. And if the trend was already up, then you're going to assume the buyers are still in charge and that the sellers are just attempting to take control, but they probably won't succeed. So those are the four different realities that you can have. We're up bars, buyers are in charge, down bars, sellers in charge, inside bars, nobody's in charge, and outside bars, the group in charge favors the momentum of the market, the prior momentum, not the future predicted momentum, but the prior established confirmable momentum. And those are the four realities of a bar chart. There will never be any new reality that occurs. So we know that we're dealing with a very solid foundation, a very logical foundation, not trying to have some grand philosophy, but just starting with this solid foundation. And from this foundation, every concept of river theory is built. So it's built on something that's incontrovertible, unchangeable, and is not based on opinion. And unfortunately, I can't give you the details on how that's done.
Yeah, well, that's a million-dollar question, you know, how exactly that works. And obviously, a few fortunate students of yours are receiving that knowledge as we speak of learning from you on how that's done. And it's really interesting that you talk about the inside and outside bar. And as this interview taking place, right now it's November 29th, and obviously yesterday we had a hammer candle in the S&P, and essentially it's almost like an outside bar. And then today, of course, we kind of have somewhat a breakout. And it's really interesting that you talk about that, how the bar works and how the psychology and what kind of trader is inside those bars. and how they work, and in some way what you just say makes sense. And
well, river theory, managing each bar as it happens, so it's just like you're managing your boat as you're in real-time experience and deciding whether to, you know, paddle to the right or the left or stop or whatever you're going to do. It's all real-time based on current real observations, not expectations of the future. So I look at the market being sort of an object flowing through a river that has to do with how you should behave based on where you are in the river.
Right.
The river channels are self-created by the market. They're not determined by the analyst. They are market-defined, and it's a scientific kind of process on how that's done, so that you're always dealing with a very objective process of creating channels. Most people, when they look at charts, they just pick highs and pick lows and draw lines and decide, you know, that's it. But the problem of drawing channels on the chart that you're looking at is it's sort of like being in the forest and trying to decide, you know, by looking at the trees, what the perimeter of the forest is. You can't decide the perimeter of the forest by looking at the individual trees as you're walking through the forest. So river channels and channeling in particular has to be done on a larger scale to make sense and to contextualize market action. So all channeling is always done on a larger degree, not the current time frame. This gives context and a sort of a river environment, you might say, to market action, which then starts to make all the concepts of river theory really sort of come to life. And it was the final piece of the puzzle for me. I discovered the individual components regarding price and time and bias, or what I call, you know, top and bottom picking, bargain hunting, and trend following. I figured out the individual components, how traders enter the market, where they enter, where they put their stops, how they exit, and all that stuff. But I didn't understand how to contextualize it all and what it all meant for quite a long time. It took me probably 5 to 7 years to come up with that idea. And then it all started making a lot more sense.
Right. Well, Glenn, I really appreciate your time, and I hope those three segments of interview regarding Neely River technology has been beneficial to our audience. And if there's any question or concern, please contact neilway.com, and I'm sure the customer service representative will be more than happy to help you. Right, Glenn?
Questions about the Neely River that I didn't answer, besides, you know, specific details, or just anything you want to say or ask about it?
No, I'm talking about, like, if anybody who is interested in finding out more, or perhaps, you know, become one of your students and learn from you.
You personally want to ask me anything about river theory that you don't feel we've covered that we need to cover?
At this moment, no, I do not.
Okay, well, I appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time to do the interview, and hopefully my customers will find this interview useful in understanding better what I've been doing for the last 5 or so years in my trading service, because this is an integral part of my trading service. I just wanted my customers to get a better idea of what River Theory is all about, so they understand what I'm doing and why, and it wouldn't be such a mystery to them anymore.
Well, in some way it makes total sense, because, you know, in your trading servers, you actually categorize based on hourly, daily, and weekly. And now you mentioned about your detailed analysis of, you know, based on the bar, and that makes sense. Based on those time frame, you can actually chart the price action, you know, in a weekly bar or hourly bar or daily bar, and to determine, you know, where the river is going and how it's going to flow, and then allow you to set, you know, stop and profit target for different time frame traders. So, yeah, this whole thing makes total sense of what you're doing.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you doing the interview, and hopefully we'll have something new and exciting to talk about in the next few weeks.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, Glenn.
Okay. Thanks a lot.